I call them labels, like little sticky notes get put all over me, like successful, leader, young, entrepreneurial, creative, all these things. Well, what followed that season was a drought that I caused. I can very clearly correlate the causation of that drought to a decision that I made. And so it became really, really dark for me because my identity was in these things that were no longer true.
Welcome to a bonus episode of the How Leaders Think podcast, the show that transforms you by giving you new ways to think. I'm your host, Kenny Lang, and with me today is a duo. It is our first twofer. So that's a cool record that'll be in Guinness books. But we have Benj Miller, who is the CEO of System and Soul, a business operating framework that teaches leadership teams how to find unity, get healthy, and be more effective. I feel a little bad that I had to read that part. I should know it by memory by now, right? He's also founded 9 other businesses. That's 9. That's almost all of your fingers. In varying industries, from marketing to software, and building those businesses and experiencing the successes and failures that we all encounter along the way, he discovered a passion to help other founders and their teams grow with purpose. And because I have a second one, I have a half to and Mackenzie Decker, which we're going to have a fun fact at the end of the podcast involving the name Mackenzie Decker. So there's going to be a cool tip that Benj is going to lay on us about using her name on Amazon. So stay tuned. Mackenzie runs the day-to-day operations of System and Soul and is a lifelong learner of leadership. It's great alliteration. She's passionate about helping business owners unlock potential in their teams and gain clarity about what they can build together. Welcome to the podcast, Benj Mackenzie.
Thanks. Awesome to be here. Honored. And also congratulations to you on your second half Ironman over the weekend. That is phenomenal and unbelievable.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I saw a lot of people with the full Iron Man tattoo on the back of their legs. And I wondered if I can just have like a half of one on one calf and then the other half on the other. I don't know what the rules are of Iron Man tattooing, but I should probably figure that out before I put ink to body.
I think you can get the half now and you got to wait to do the other half until you do it.
Yeah.
Oh, is that okay? Yeah. That makes sense. I like it. Well, hey, the reason we're having this bonus episode is because something amazing is happening, and that is the release of the book Renegades, and that is what we're here to talk about specifically. So just to tee it up, like, what is this book about?
The premise of the book is that most people that found companies are renegades in some sort of way. And what we mean by that is just they're willing to go against some norm in society and business, with a product, with the culture, something. They're willing to throw some of our cultural rules out the window and go the opposite direction. And we call those renegade founders. And then they go along and that works for a little while. And then they hit what we call the founder gap. The founder gap is where we start to learn, start to get coaches, start to read a lot of articles, and everything tells us we need to grow up and stop being a renegade. And that's the opposite message that we have with this book, because we believe to get to the other side, you need to go from a renegade founder to a renegade leader. Don't lose the renegade, just make a shift. And there's 6 shifts that we highlight in the book to go from a renegade founder to a renegade leader.
Interesting. Mackenzie, is there anything you wanted to add there?
Yeah, I would say this is a book for founders, but one of the things we also say about it is it's a book for the people surviving them. And I'm with you. I'm one of those people. You have a friend. But it is a tool to understand the mind and the desires and the way that person works, so that you can kind of be an ally for them and move out of a place of frustration with them and move into a place of, you know, unity and alignment with them.
I think that's really important. I've sat in both roles. I mean, the language that the three of us use when we talk about system and soul is that visionary and then an operator. And typically that renegade is the visionary. And operators, second in commands, are getting a lot more love these days, and that's great. But I'm excited to hear, and when I got the first chance to read through the book, was that, Mackenzie, your perspective added in, I think, is really, really helpful, because a lot of people just worship at the altar of the visionary, right? Like, we have all these magazines and it's like, hustle and be innovative. Oh, and by the way, if they're a jackass, just put up with it, right? And that's not at all what we advocate. And I think you also give some ways, though, to help the pieces fit together, because that is a really unique and dynamic relationship. What for you is important, do you think, in making, every time I hear the word shift, all I think is shift happens. I don't know if I just did a car commercial, but we're not sponsored at this point. So in making those shifts, though, my experience tells me that renegade founders can't become renegade leaders, probably absent of a great relationship with a second in command. Is that fair to say? Has that been your experience, or do you have a different perspective?
I mean, maybe I'm biased, but so I think one of the things we talk about in the book, and that I've experienced myself and seen with so many second in commands and founders, is I mean, the founder can only, and I think we all know this about ourselves. We have like a limited capacity for what we can do. And we have blind spots. We have ways that we just are not wired to work. And that's a really amazing thing. And I think what we talk about in this book is that founders have a very unique gift set, that they need to lean into more and more, especially as they scale and they have the ability to bring in other people to fill the gaps for them instead of having to be all things to all people. And so I think the second in command, or the operator is the term we use, there's many ways that relationship can look over time, but it's like bringing in the other half of your brain. So the founder should be, you know, the innovator, the dreamer, the one who's bringing the future to life, bringing it forward. And then you've got your operator, who's totally game for, tell me, how can I help you build this idea? And then how do I go execute on it? How do I go empower the team to execute on it? And so I think there's just a pairing here that it accelerates what a founder can do on their own. Sure. But like, do you want it to take 3 years, 5 years, 10 years, or do you want to do it in partnership with someone who can accelerate that with you now? That's what I'd say to your question.
Yeah, that's good.
What do you think, Ben?
Well, we so much of this book is the psychology of going from renegade founder to renegade leader. And one of the things that happens in that shift is that the visionary, the founder, has to come to grips with the fact that they're not actually in their highest and best use right now. And so the problem is to let go of the things that they've been accustomed to becomes an identity thing. They are needed to make these decisions. They are needed to get these things done. And so part of it is this psychology shift that as long as I am still doing these things, I am not able to go work on the next big idea, the next big relationship, the next big feature, the next big hire, you know, the big exponential multipliers for the organization. So the operator's huge. We've been talking about that. But before we even go into the six shifts, we talk about this psychology of what needs to happen to lose our identity as the renegade founder to go to renegade leader. But then building the right team. And it absolutely starts with that operator. We talk about the power of an admin who can multiply your time by taking care of the administrative parts of your life, of your business. A coach, the power of a coach, somebody that's been down the road before you, power of a peer group where you can process some of these transitions and shifts. And then it's all about building out your leadership team. And it's not just your operator, but everybody who's running a function of your business. There comes a point in the time in the business where they can't just be the manager of the task list that the visionary gave them. Mm. They've got to bring significant positive impact to that function, be able to lead that better than that visionary could in order to earn their trust to be able to go and execute.
Yeah, they need to be a thinker as well as a doer, right?
For sure, yeah.
I want to add one thing to that. I think sometimes when people hear us talk about this stuff, they're like, oh, okay, well, you know, maybe when I have $10 million or $50 million in revenue, I can have this kind of build out in my business. I think it's just a mindset and a way of structuring something, even if it is a $1 or $2 million business. With Benj and I, it started out like I got hired to help him with his calendar as much as I was helping with strategy. And that worked for the time where we were at that point in his business. And then it's grown from there. But I think it's a way of structuring the relationships in the business at any stage that only helps you grow it. That helps you structure it over time and grow it and add layers to it as the mm-hmm. business grows and reaches that higher level.
Right. That's good. I want to go back to something you said, Benj, when you talked about making that mindset shift. And you say it, and I know you know this, like that's easier. Most of the things in this book are easier said than done, right?
Yeah, for sure.
If building a healthy, thriving business was easy, everyone would be doing it. But I think there's a lot of business owners out there and probably even leaders listening to this that if they were to see Simon Sinek post, what got you here won't get you there. They'd heart it, like it, celebrate it, whatever, you know, reactions are afforded to us on our given platform. They'd be like, hell yes, and all this. But what really goes into, you said, letting go of an identity.
Yeah.
And the problem with letting go of an identity, in my experience, has been, yeah, I see that there could be something more or different or better, whatever you want to call it, but this has kind of been working for me. Can you speak to that and how, like, where's, it's not a shortcut by any means, but what's helped you and maybe what have you seen help others, like such as your clients, break through that mindset?
Yeah. Well, most of the instigator of the breakthrough, unfortunately, is the pain that what was working is no longer working because I am not infinitely scalable. When people say things like, what got you here won't get you there, and we all go, yeah, that makes total sense. I agree. Okay, but why have you not let go of that employee that can't rise to the occasion of what you actually need right now? It's because they helped you get here and you have a loyalty to them for helping you get there. And I'm not advocating we go fire everybody. Humanity and dignity is at the forefront of absolutely everything we would do. So could they rise to the occasion? I would work my butt off to try and make that happen. If it doesn't, is there another place in the organization? Some people get promoted into management or leadership and they hate it. It happened to my brother within one of my own companies. He was a shareholder, so he thought he needed to, you know, live at the most senior leadership level, and he was ready to quit. When we dug into why and what was going on, you know, he doesn't want to lead people. He doesn't want to lead strategy. He loves building things. And so the more time he can build, and that's great. We've worked together for 17 years because he's figured out his sweet spot. I don't expect more or different of him in any way because he's exceptional at what he does. So it's really about taking the time to understand the people, what they want, what their capacity is, where they're going to go. And then you asked about the personal side. It is identity. You know, my story, I won't go into the whole thing right now, but in a season of success, I subconsciously let some, I call them labels, like little sticky notes get put all over me, like, you know, successful leader, young, entrepreneurial, creative, all these things. Well, what followed that season was a drought that I caused. I can very clearly correlate the causation of that drought to a decision that I made. And so it became really, really dark for me because my identity was in these things that were no longer true. And so the same thing, that's an exaggerated version of the same thing, that, oh, the guy that needs to make all the decisions, the guy that needs to, you know, be on call in case a customer has an emergency, you know, answer emails at all times of night. We all have these little traps that we fall into, and a lot of them are rooted in the validation that we give ourselves from doing those things.
I gotcha. Yeah. I was going to ask further on that because I've encountered that, with people, is when we start introducing the System and Soul framework, and the visionary can sometimes feel like they're being put out to pasture and feel disconnected. People are taking things from me and going to do them. And there was sort of a validation in the chaos of their necessity, and suddenly they don't feel so necessary. Yeah. What have the two of you seen in terms of crossing that particular threshold? You said at the, you know, very beginning of the conversation is they're not in a place where it's the highest and best use of their time being utilized in the company. So what do we do to help them see their new purpose?
Yeah. Yeah. And the book tries to lay that out, but there's nothing more powerful than their own team looking at them, the leader, and saying, we don't need you to do those things anymore. We need you to go do this other thing, because the organization's looking at that leader in the same way. What got us here is not going to get us there. And so you, leader, have to go be somebody different. And we just don't want you to, we joke about going from startup to grown up without losing your soul. And that's part of this transition, is going from renegade founder to renegade leader. Because the minute you try and go to mature, grown up, manager, leader of this organization, you lose the renegade. And that renegade is one of the secret ingredients for the organization that you have right now.
Yeah. So one of the things, and we've used the term, obviously it's the name of the book. And I think some people might have an emotion or a definition attached to the word renegade. Mackenzie, I know that you spend a lot of time trying to organize the chaos that is the mind of Benj Miller, and we're all praying for you about that. But I know that you're someone who is very thoughtful and deliberate in some of the choices, and I'm curious if you can give us a peek behind the choice of the word renegade.
Oh man, what a great question. I have to think about it. I know we mulled over like so many terms. I think maybe Maverick was in there. There is all kinds of like, how do we describe this person? Top Gun. Yeah. We Maverick, had a lawsuit, so we couldn't do that one. No. I think the word itself it captures this. I mean, if you think about, it makes me think about, and there's probably a couple illustrations in the book around, it's kind of like going from like a renegade is like the Lone Ranger, you know, it's like the cowboy out there on his own and he's got to get his gang together to fight crime kind of thing. And I think there's just some of what you see in the book is we wanted it to be fun, of course, right? Because that's how we like to do things, but we wanted it to call upon, you know, characters, people and characters that fictional and real that represent that spirit. And I think the word just really encompassed a lot of those people that came to mind for us. We touched on in the book a lot of movies, characters in those movies that represent that renegade spirit. And, and I think it's just, they represented it. And also I think there's just, with the definition itself, it's like, it's interesting because it kind of like, it rides the line between being a positive and a negative term. Right. Like someone who deserts a set of principles is, I think, the true definition of that word, which a lot of people would say like, oh, like that's not a good thing. But right. It's also the, it can be the most frustrating thing in the world to people who are not renegades. Cause it's like, why are you messing up the rules? But then there's, but that's also the person that pushes something to the limit or turns it on its head in a way that nobody else thought to do before. And that's how we find new ways forward. So I love that it kind of rides that line. I think that that's where the, you know, the choice came in.
Yeah. Benji, I want to reframe that question back to you. You mentioned the sticky notes, and the labels and things like that. How have you seen what McKinsey was talking about, the negative and the positive of that label, that sticky note of renegade, show up? I mean, having started now 10 businesses, how has that shown up in your life and in your leadership?
Well, it's not meant to be a label, but it is meant to validate a gift that a certain group of our population's been given. And in the process of growing up, most of our teachers told us that that gift was a liability. So our teachers through our formal education year said, no, we don't do that here. These are the rules. Sit down, raise your hand, ask to go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. You need the key, blah, blah, blah. And I think we are born into this world and everybody has a little renegade in them. And society tries its best to suck the life out of our renegadeness. And if we look at all the people that inspire us, all the world changers from history, the mm-hmm. big names, you know, there was this renegadeness in them that said, I can no longer stand for the way things are. I need to stand for something that I believe in. And I just want to encourage everybody. I forget where it is, maybe in the foreword or maybe McKinsey, you've said it, but just like part of our hope is that everybody reads this and finds a little bit of the renegade that they have deep inside of them. And it comes to life again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know what? One thing I've realized, even just as we finished the book and talked about it, that some of that decision-making, the way that a renegade, I think of myself as on the outside of being a renegade. So I talk about renegades like I'm not one, but a lot of their decision-making, it may not be like totally logic driven or like, you know what I mean? Like it's very like,
Like, I know what you mean.
It's like, there's something intuitive and there's something that's like, focused on like I think Benji, you say like they can see perceive a future and go after it in a way that other people, it's like, unless it's concrete, unless it's right in front of them, it's hard to see the end goal with this. But I think what's so profound about a renegade mind is that the parameters don't have to exist and it doesn't have to make sense right away for it to be the right answer. And I think that's one thing, I think that's a good challenge for all of us, like to let our mind exist outside of the bounds, and encounter some of that innovation and type of thinking.
Yeah, absolutely. The way y'all described it makes me think of these lyrics. It's in a Fall Out Boy song, but it says, "My heart is like a stallion. They like me better when it's broken." And that always really resonated with me. And it reminded me of what y'all are describing, is like, we have that, but sometimes people love the renegade spirit if it's in the direction they want to go. But generally they want you to be calm. They want you to be sedated. They want you to just fall in line. I feel like I'm literally describing the Think Different Apple commercial from decades ago, but just marching on, and you got to think differently. You mentioned that there are six shifts. And so can you just briefly take us through those six shifts and sort of how you think of those? Because some people say, well, six is too many, but it's not enough. And, you know, if you're John Maxwell, you have the 21 irrefutable shifts of leadership. And John, if you're listening and you write a book, I want royalties, but with that title. But take us through at a high level what those shifts are.
How quickly do you want me to do that?
I mean, this isn't my Ironman race. You're not on the clock, so whatever you want to do.
So each one of the shifts really has that rule that society gave us, and then it goes into what the renegade said. As a result, creating the organization that it created. And then from there, we talk about the shift, the slight shift, the reframe to go from renegade founder to renegade leader. And the reality is most renegade leaders are actually really good at three or four of these. They've already done them. And somewhere in here, there's one or two that might be a new idea and might be the missing key that unlocks the lock. So the first one is play the hand you're dealt. The world tells us hey, just play the hand you're dealt. And the renegade says, I'm going to bet on myself. I'm going to actually, pull the ace out of my sleeve or draw one on a napkin. I don't need to just deal with what I have. I can go create something new. The shift becomes to bet with intention. So we go from betting on ourselves. I'm going to go start this. I'm going to go do this. And then we start to bet more holistically. We bet as a team together. What are the bets we're going to make? We bet even on the structure of the organization. When we lock in the processes of the organization, that's a bet that that's the best way to do it for repeatable success. So all of those things, when we figure out what are the most important objectives for us to focus on in the next 90 days, that is a bet that we're making with intention as a group. The second one, the world says, don't quit your day job. And the renegade says, I'll dance to the beat of my own drum. I remember one time, my wife and I were dancing, I think at a wedding, and I'm the worst dancer in the world. And she said, you're not even dancing to the beat. I'm like, you can't hear the music in my own head. and I was mostly joking, but I think I live life like that. Like there's a tune in my head and I've got to dance to the beat of that. As a renegade leader, we shift that into setting the baseline. So if we think about jazz, it's full of improv, lots of different ways to go and play, and it might be different every night, but there's a baseline and everybody's playing off of the baseline. So the baseline sets a cadence for the organization. You kind of know what's coming. You know what to expect. You know when we're going to get back to that. We know when we're going to revisit that. We know when we're going to meet about that. And so your choice is to set the baseline. We set some really, really practical ways of doing that. The third rule is the world says, know what you're getting into. And the renegade says, I'm going to trust my gut. And that is great. That is a superpower early in an organization because the organization is small enough that that renegade has his finger on the pulse of everything going on. But that's not scalable. As it grows, you can't. And so it's really, really important for that visionary and the organization and the individuals within it to know when you're winning. So the shift is to go from trusting your gut to know when you're winning. And that's about knowing your numbers, knowing your metrics. Everybody has a number, every team has a number, every function of the business has a number. And if we know what those are, then we call them a scoreboard. And the benefit there is, when you're playing sport, you can look up in the middle of the game and knowing you're winning. You can take a timeout. You can reevaluate at halftime, change the strategy, whatever you need to do. But if you don't know if you're winning, you can't do that. And most of us wait till the end of the game to figure out the score. So rule number four, the world says be patient and you might get lucky. And the renegade says, I'm going to make my own luck. And so they just are determined to, like Mackenzie said, bring this preferred future into the present to start building on it. The shift that we need to make there is not my own luck, but our own destination. So the shift is to start with the end in mind, a great Stephen Covey principle. But we bring in a few ideas here. So we need to know what we're trying to accomplish. It's kind of a, think about it like a mission, right? We need to know when we want to achieve it, which sets the pace, right? If we want to if we want to triple in 3 years, it's like a 20% growth rate. We know what that feels like. If we want to triple in 6 months, we've got to make different decisions, have different capital, have different leadership, you know? Right. So the pace determines, it's a lot about appetite for risk when we start talking about pace and resources. And then the most important element of this starting with the end of mind is being able to articulate why any of it matters. And this is, this is the storytelling aspect of leadership, to say, this is why this matters. And here's how we all play a role into seeing it come to fruition. The fifth rule is don't make a scene.
Can I pause you for a second?
Sure.
Cause on that fourth rule,
it's your podcast.
This is a, it has my face on it. But this is a part that when I'm in session and I'm going through this part that really sticks out, and some people's like gears start like grinding a little bit in their head. Because we get into, well, I'm gonna be $100 million in the next 5 years. Fantastic. Why? Because 100 million is an impressive number, or is bigger than we are today, or whatever. And for most people and most systems or goal setting that I've seen and been around, it's set the what, set the when, get the pace down, you know, figure out, make it smart, whatever, make it a stretch goal, all these different things. But when we talk about the why being all encompassing, it has to be as appealing to the frontline employee or worker as it is to the CEO. I think some things start to change, and I watch people start going, oh, well, I guess having an 8-figure, 9-figure exit in the next 5 years is really only interesting to me as the owner. Instead of what am I calling everybody else to? And that's something that it seems really small to just answer the question, why? But it really does shift a lot of thinking with leaders in my experience, and it's been really powerful.
Yeah. Yeah. When we get into this exercise, we start in a way that feels backwards, because we actually make everybody in the room, not just the visionary, write down what are the, like, why are you here? What's interesting to you about this business? What are you trying to do? And be as selfish as possible. We're not, be so selfish that I'm not going to make anybody in the room share any of this. But what happens is we start to find a little thread that we can pull on. And for that example that you said, you know, we're going to exit with $800 million or whatever. Okay. Why? What does that get us? Well, it gives us the ability to, you know, for philanthropy, for whatever. Can we have that along the way before the exit? Yes. Can we grow into that? Yes. One of the companies I work with was like, man, the more we grow this business, the more opportunities we have to impact people. And so the number of impacts actually became something that they championed and made primary to their business. And they measure and they record. And so they want to know what's on their employees' like bucket list, professionally and personally. And then as an organization, they celebrate every time they get to put one off those lists. They had like 3 people get married and have babies this year. They didn't have anything to do with making those babies or making those marriages. But they decided, hey, we're going to count those. We're going to celebrate those. We're going to throw parties for those. Like, our business has created the opportunity for that maternity leave, for that, you know, honeymoon, whatever it is, to take place. Yeah. And so it keeps them focused on why they're doing what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that's awesome. All right. Sorry for the slowdown. On to number five.
On to number five. We're almost there. Don't make a scene. The world says, don't make a scene. And the renegade says, I got to be me. Right? It doesn't matter if I make a scene. I'm not trying to make a scene, but I'm also not trying to fit in with the status quo. And so it becomes, I got to do me. And I go out and I do me, and this business is me. And then all of a sudden, there's a lot of people, and they're not all me anymore. They can't be me. And so we've got to transition that into, we got to be we. And if we can start to articulate what we look like, we call this the ethos shift. So what we got to be we is like, really, you know, we've all had the values conversation, but I love Lencioni's line about, like, you don't really have values until they hurt. Right. So let's get really clear on the things that we won't sacrifice, even if it hurts. An identity statement for the organization, so we know who we are. And then we love Jim Collins' hedgehog concept, because it helps the organization know what our focus is. And if you have those three things, an identity statement, your values, and your hedgehog, that organization knows who they are, what they're about, and it empowers other people to say yes or no. That visionary doesn't have to be the yes or no person for every single thing. Well, does it fit our values? Does it fit our hedgehog? Does it fit our identity? Let's go, right? And especially if we play that in with the rule bite before this, our destination, is it going to lead us to our destination? Now we've empowered the organization to not just carry on and grow, but grow in the way that we would want to for the long term. The last one, the last rule is, it matters who you work for. And the renegade says, I'll work for myself, right? That's how they got here, is they're like, that didn't really work for me, old boss. I'm going to go do it my own way. Self-sufficiency becomes the superpower, but that runs out at scale. So the sixth shift is the people shift, and it's, we work together. And that's really about defining the culture that we want everyone to thrive in. Like, what is it going to look like to work here? Become world-class problem solvers. And then a very, very unique approach to leadership development and leader development and people development, all wrapped into one. And we talk about that in the book, how to think about developing people in a very different way.
Gotcha. Those are some powerful shifts. I want to make sure I enunciate that word well. But one of the things that you've mentioned before and that I really appreciate is that there's not an element of shaming the business owner, the renegade, the entrepreneur for getting started, because some people will use what got you here won't get you there as a sort of way, like, hey, stupid, that all this stuff at the beginning was cute, but now you gotta be a grown up. And I think that there's a lot of finger pointing, wagging, disapproval, and shaming that goes on, and like, oh, okay, well, I guess it doesn't value those traits and just says, hey, just like any gift or any skill, it needs to be matured in its expression. It doesn't mean that the kernel of what's there is wrong or bad. It just, the expression of it grows up. And I appreciate that, because as I was growing my first business, I struggled a lot with that, because I'm just getting started, and then I'm listening to all these podcasts and I'm reading these books and I'm talking to other, you know, agency owners and business owners, and they're all doing these things. And I'm like, oh man, like, I am totally at the kid's table, and nobody wants to feel like they're at the kid's table. Right. So I appreciated that a whole lot. Mackenzie, what are some things that crystallized for you or any color commentary in those shifts as they're being made, and possibly even from that operator second in command perspective, as what's the perspective on those shifts?
Well, I have one overarching thought, and it's related to what you were saying about like removing the shame from some of this stuff. And I think it's the whole tone of what we wanted to share with people is, it's not like pointing fingers, like you're doing this wrong, or this is your fault, or you're the reason why this isn't working and we're not growing. 'Cause how helpful is that? Like, I think what the teams and the individuals and the teams that are going to get something out of this are need to read it through the lens of like, I really want to develop a deep respect and trust for this founder and own my part in the story. I think it's such like a partnership. All of this stuff, it just requires a level of buy-in that you have to have. If you're already pointing fingers, then you're not going to get very far with the shifts to begin with, because right. You're going to be looking for someone to, you know, it's their fault for screwing it up and not doing it right. But it's such a collaborative effort, and I think the shifts are, it requires that mindset and heart set from the beginning for it to have the impact that you want it to have over time. So that's what I'd say. And especially in the role that I have, and as I build our team, I mean, all this stuff just requires a really, and I'm learning this all the time. Like, we don't have the most complex team. I haven't led teams of hundreds of people before. I know that's a different animal, but like even a team of five people, like you've got to create and maintain a level of trust and, just a collaborative spirit that everyone can rally behind and stay, you know, united around the same goals and the same destination, the same, upholding the values. And I think that's just key to all of this. It's the trust, the respect, the honoring one another as individuals. The word we use a lot I just love getting to say this, but like it's all about championing dignity first at the forefront. So I think that's what we have to think about as we go into this.
That's really good. I'm curious in the process of writing. I heard Michael Hyatt have a quote long, long time ago. Of course he's, I don't know if he's trying to catch up to Maxwell in number of books or what, but he said that thoughts disentangle themselves. It was like passing over lips and through pencil tips. Fun little phrase. But I'm curious, for the two of you, what crystallized or what did you learn that surprised you as you wrote this book?
That's a fun question. There's a aspect of this that the hardest part was finding the story we wanted to tell, because there's lots of pieces in here that you can find, like the tangible tactical exercise, go do this, do this. We end each of these shifts chapters with some action items, you know, and this isn't like brand new stuff, right? Some of it's the blocking and tackling of the world, but there was a story that needed to be told, and it was really around, we've been talking about it, but this renegade and really all, like, we are in a world where we need renegades and we need business leaders who are willing to be renegades. But in order for them to be renegades, we need them to make these shifts so that they can keep being renegades and the organizations can keep thriving, because these businesses that run like this are the absolute best places to work. They impact the communities that they're in. They create philanthropy and giving, and like, they just raise up communities. And the heart of that was the hardest thing to get from inside to pencil. And I don't even know if we fully got it. But we end the book with like the, each one of those shifts, there's, we even just slightly take a minute to lay out the bet with intention is about the dignity of clarity. The set the baseline mm-hmm. is about the dignity you can give people of consistency to know what they're expecting when they show up. To know when you're winning is the dignity of success. Start with the end of the end in mind is the dignity of knowing why this matters. We got to do we is the dignity of identity. That we work together is the dignity of humanity. So there's dignity that we can give not just to the people who work for us, but to their families and the communities that they live in all throughout.
That's good. How about you, Mackenzie? What surprised you or what crystallized for you?
Well, you know, I think in terms of putting the book together, something clicked for us. And we wrote, by the way, this is like the third book, I think, that we have, like, there's like 200, 300 pages somewhere in a Google Doc of other stuff that we're like, no, this doesn't work. And so in that process of like writing and then cutting things out, one of the pieces in the structure that we landed on is I just really love, and I think it's kind of profound to me and how I think about not just leading in a business, but doing anything in life. We kind of talk about the before any shifts happen in the business, there's a, you know, the personal shift, the identity shift that we're talking about. And that concept is so deep. And, you know, we probably gave 15 pages to it. I don't know. It's brief, but it's so powerful. It's such a powerful bridge to get to the things that we want for our business. It has to start with us. So that was really, really profound to me in the way we structured it. The other thing I would say is just in spending so much time with this, and I mean, Benj and I wish we had like had a stopwatch and calculated how many hours we spent on this. but like, I got to spend so much time with Benj, hearing him describe these things, trying to like put words around it and put language around something that he's dealt with for 20 years, and like getting to spending all that time with that, I just feel like I've developed an empathy that I didn't have before for someone wow. who's very different in the way that they operate and think, and just like an appreciation for how much, like for their mind and what they bring to the world, and how much of a challenge this is to build something incredible and then not hand it over, but let other people help you hold it up. I think that it sounds so, it does sound like, oh, duh, like that's what we're going to have to do because I can't do everything. But that's so hard. And I think I just didn't, like, I feel like I understand it and empathize with it in a way that, sympathize with it, I guess, in a way that I couldn't have if we hadn't done this project. So.
Wow. That sounds incredible. Really powerful. All right. Well, the book is officially released on Tuesday, October 17th. So whether you're hearing this on the day or day after, whenever, 5 years in the future, you know, hopefully you've picked it up by now. The title is Renegades: Break Rules, Find Freedom, a book for founders. I do want you to address one quick thing, and I know y'all have gotten this question a lot just within the S2 coach community, but while it does reference founders and a lot of those things, if some, you know, 4th, 10th CEO of an organization, if somebody isn't a founder, can they still get some, this is a stupid question, but can someone still get something out of this book for them to advance their leadership and their organization?
Absolutely. Yes. And, I think that they'll find that they're probably in that position of leadership because of the renegade that is inside of them, whether they've let it out of the cage or not.
All right. Let's uncage the renegade. We need that as like a hashtag or a t-shirt. Cause
yeah,
I would wear that. So Mackenzie, let's start working on some limited edition t-shirts. All right. Now, people want to go, they want to consume this book, they want to learn everything that they can from what y'all just shared. Where should they be going? How should they be getting their hands on it?
Yeah, Amazon's your one source, and this is your tie back from the beginning, that If you can go type in the whole Renegades thing, or you can just type Mackenzie Decker and the first result will be the book.
Absolutely. And it's on, I think you said it's going to be in, it is a hardback, or is it, did we do?
Paperback. And okay. You can get it on Kindle. You can do like an ebook if you have an e-reader.
Now I'm going to go ahead and tell y'all this. When you jump on, you're going to look at the price and think it's like in Canadian dollars or something like that. It's not. This book is gorgeous. It is very well thought out, well designed. I don't know. Somebody's probably going to nail me on this, but it reminded me a lot of like Rework and Remote, Jason Fried and DHH and a lot of their books. They always included really creative, appropriate artwork to the book that made it more of an experience than just reading words on a page. And Benjamin McKenzie aren't paying me to say this, but I really do appreciate how thoughtful y'all were about bringing the book to life and not just putting another business book out there.
Thank you.
If someone wants to follow up with either of you, maybe ask a question or two, or just wants to see, follow you for great content and more tidbits like what you shared today, where would you send them? We'll go Bench, then Mackenzie, and then we'll tie a bow on it.
Easiest place to find me is LinkedIn. Just search Benj Miller. There's not too many of me. And also have a daily leadership email. Take you about 10, 15 seconds to consume every day. It's a tip, a reminder, a model, something we need to work on, think about as a leader running businesses. This is for not just founders, but anybody in a business. And that's at the numbers 261.com.
I second all that. If you love us and want to work with us, you can find us at systemandsoul.com.
Awesome. I like that, Mackenzie, you remembered systemandsoul.com before Bench did. And we'll also, we'll link to all those things. We'll link to the book. We're going to link to both of y'all's LinkedIn accounts. So you may get some more follow requests and get some friends out of the deal. Well, thank y'all so much for coming on the show. I'm excited about the book, excited to hand it out like candy and make it rain Renegades. But until next time, change the way you think, you'll change the way you lead. We'll see.